Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
Hey, hey, hey. How's it going?
Happy New Year's to you and to everybody.
Happy New Year's. We'll have to, like, shout that in the middle of the episode once it actually flips over.
Happy New Year's!
Happy New Year's!
Well, and we hope you all had a wonderful holiday. We definitely took a little break there in the middle there. Thanks for being patient with us, but... You know, who's listening to podcasts during...
Like on Christmas Day.
Yeah. I mean, if you are, I mean, that's cool. That's what the kind of life you lead, but...
I wasn't.
I was busy. I was extremely busy, so there's a lot going on. But
same here.
This week we have... we're taking another interesting turn. The last week we did the Star Wars... Last Jedi Roundtable, Nerds of Roundtable. This week, we are going to delve into something a little Star Trek-y. We're going to do Black Mirror's USS Callister episode.
So, full spoilers for USS Callister coming.
Yes. It's definitely an interesting... I mean, if you haven't seen Black Mirror, think of an anthology TV show where each episode's relatively different. There's none of the characters really match up.
Kind of like Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it's very Twilight Zone, but it's more based on technology and the reflections of the technology has to do with our own civilization, our morality and ethics, you know, and it's a Black Mirror, what's looking back at us. So this one has a Star Trek, heavily referenced Star Trek episode. So it piqued our interest. I know it's piqued yours, Dave.
Oh, yeah. And it's something I definitely want to talk about. And I was originally thinking we'd do Prime Directive 2 tonight before we get back into Discovery. But you're like, oh, it's Callister's that. I'm like, oh, it is.
Yeah. I didn't think it was going to be out so fast, but then I was like, well, if we can fit Callister in before we go back in Discovery territory, this'd be cool. And we'll pick up on Prime Directive Part 2 after Discovery.
We have lots of Part 2s to get to in 2018. We've got Sex and Trek Part 2 we need to get to eventually, Religion and Star Trek 2. And ideally, they should be back-to-back like they were last time, or close to back-to-back.
Just so we all feel guilty.
The only bit of news, and it's not even new anymore, it happened weeks ago, but Discovery, they released a new set of hero posters for the second half of season one, and guess who's in one of the posters? You probably already know, it's Vok.
Yeah, Vok.
He's the back shot where he's looking over his shoulder. He's full Klingon. And are we going to see Klingon Vok? Have we been wrong about Ash all along? Or are they just showing that because Vok in whatever form makes his appearance?
I don't know. I don't know.
Or if they're in the mirror universe, maybe Vok shows up in the mirror universe.
Oh, very interesting. Maybe there's another Vok and they bring him back. Or maybe Ash Tyler is Vok, and they bring back another Vok, and then there's two Voks.
And then they can switch him out of Ash Tyler's body.
You just stepped on my joke. I just said two Voks. Come on.
I'm slow. It's New Year's Eve as we're recording this. I drink during the show, and... It's New Year's. I've been pre-gaming, so sue me. A little slow.
It's all right. But it isn't.
Two Voks. That's a good one.
It's going to be cool to see what happens. I mean, we don't have many episodes left here before the season ends, so.
Just six?
Yeah, they're going to have to wrap this up pretty quick.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
There can't be any side episodes of Harry Mudd's and stuff like that.
God, I hope not. I mean, as much as I love Harry Mudd, the seasons are too short for one-offs.
Yeah, for sure.
Like if they gave us like another like a 23 or 24 season episode, yeah, give me some one-offs. But on a 15 tight short season, I'm like, don't do one-offs, please, if you're trying to tell a story.
Yeah, unless it's a really good story and it's you know, it does something more for the characters. I didn't think that story did much for the characters other than introduce the maybe the love affair between Ash Tyler and Michael Berman. So
yeah, because she killed himself for him. Mm-hmm. That was interesting.
It was.
Especially for her, since she's not really sure about her feelings and stuff like that. That's interesting.
Yeah, that was, well, and we kind of got her breaking down her Vulcan conditioning a little bit and turning on her human emotions, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, should we get into Black Mirror, USS Callister?
Yeah, and honestly, when they announced they were doing a Star Trek episode, I was like, I hope it's not parody. I hope it's not parody. And it's parody and it's super dark, because I was scared Dark Mirror would just get goofy, and it was a little bit goofy, but it was so dark.
Yeah, it was goofy in a strange way, but then we'll get into it. It gets twisted. So this is going to be full spoilers, but let's just say, what is your takeaway after seeing this episode without giving away spoilers?
Like the whole episode, just like, especially once like the story got going, like I had a sick sinking feeling in me the entire run of the episode, which is usually the mark of a really good Black Mirror episode. What about you?
I thought it had some interesting plays on tropes. Obviously the Star Trek trope itself, but also kind of like the nerdy guy who's kind of being treated like shit, especially with his coworkers and stuff like that. And I like how they did things to kind of change that up a little bit. They mixed that up. But while I like some of it, I think it was reminiscent a lot to White Christmas episode. So,
oh, I mean, it was also a very Christmassy themed, ironically enough.
Yeah, that too. But the White Christmas episode, I think, was in season one or season two. I can't remember. But
that one was like the one with John Hamm.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite episode of Black Mirror, and that one is just so soul crushing. And it's amazing. Yeah.
But it had that kind of feel to it in a lot of ways. But
yeah, it did. It had the soul-crushing feel. Like, I felt that way almost all the way through USS Callister. Like, as soon as, like, you figured out what was going on, like, within the first, like, 30 minutes, it was like, oh. And I'm just like, I just felt uncomfortable, like, the entire time.
I kind of felt uncomfortable, but for other reasons, which I think I will get into more when we get into spoilers. But I liked it. It just I think it was kind of weak in a couple spots, but not terrible weak, not like awful or anything like that.
Well, it wasn't like, I can't remember the name of the episode from last season, but the one with the women who are dying.
All right.
That one didn't have any plot twist, really. It was just kind of like, oh, well,
just sucks.
It's just a love. Yeah, this just sucks, and it's a love story. But yeah, it wasn't like, there was nothing like super gut wrenching about it. To me, there wasn't anyway. It didn't even feel like a Black Mirror episode, honestly. At least this one still feels very Black Mirror-y.
Oh yeah, for sure, absolutely. Okay, full spoilers. So if you have not seen Black Mirror, USS Callister, season 4, episode 1, definitely shut off this episode. Our podcast now.
Just go to Netflix. It's right there. It's right there for you.
You can watch it right now.
Very good.
If you don't care about spoilers, and if you're just interested in what they had to do or what they had to say because you don't really want to watch it, definitely give us a listen to, because this is interesting in a lot of different manners for technology. And how we treat technology, and how we treat, how we are treated in society as well. So
I wish we had Kipling Brown on, because this is very much in the same.
She would have a blast with this.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have to mention it when we have Ron for Prometheus, Alien Covenant.
Yeah, for sure. But okay, so like I said, this is U.S. Callister, season 4, episode 1, and this is air date December 29th, 2017. Couple things and notes. We have this Captain Daly character. Robert Daly is modeled after Kirk in this very beginning. He's on the USS Callister, and they're trying to defeat an arch enemy called Valdek. And they destroy Valdek's ship because he kind of used some kind of Kirk maneuvers.
They flew into a gas field.
And it powered their torpedoes. I forgot the name of the torpedoes, what they called them, but it was like similar to proton torpedoes. And it powered it, and it like supercharged them and blew up his ship. But he has an escape pod, which manages to survive. And after this, we have a very strange scene after he wins.
He kisses the Uhura character, and then he kisses
the blue
alien chick. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And they're all singing and dancing around him.
Hip hip hooray! Hip hip hooray!
Yeah, and up until that point, it does have just before that, it does definitely has the original series kind of feel to it.
Even him kissing the two girls back to back was like. Kirk would have done it if given the chance.
Oh, I'm sure he would have.
Yeah, Yeoman Rand, come here. Uhura, come here.
Right.
We just defeated the Gorn. I'm feeling Randy.
Yeah, yeah. All that wrestling with that reptilian.
Morty.
But then he wakes up, and we see the real-life Robert Daly is going to work, and he's the chief technical officer for a company called Callister Incorporated. So it's named after this ship called the USS Callister. And it produces a multiplayer online game called Infinity. And they use this very similar – I think we've seen this before here and there in Black Mirror. But like basically as a small device that goes onto your temple.
Yeah.
And it's this neural interface, and you're just fully immersed inside inside this game.
Before it showed this office was a CTO, I thought he was like some low-level employee at first.
I did too.
Because the receptionist treats him like crap and you know, he won't scan the pass or whatever.
Yeah, his badge won't let him in, and he says, well, you should have done that, and you know, whatever it was like, and he says, well, it is the beginning of the year, I can't do it. I forgot what the reason was, but the receptionist, even though he's the chief technical officer, the receptionist doesn't care who he is. He's like, yeah, screw you. She's like dead inside, you know. All she does is file her nails, she's going through her phone constantly.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, so we get, so that's sort of like, in just to mention too, the real life Robert Daly, he does not look as dashing as the,
his hair's thinning. He's older looking.
Kind of slumped down. But when we see him on the USS Callister and he's Captain Daly,
he's swaggering just like Kirk.
Yeah, he's got the Kirk swagger. He's got the hair quiff going and everything. So, it's a different character. So we're seeing two different characters, but they're one and the same, which we'll find out later why. So he comes in, he sits down, he's in his office, and there's a couple interactions. Like he asks for a latte for one of the interns, and the guy's like, oh, yeah, I'll get that to you. And he kind of ignores him. So it seems like everyone just kind of like, isn't giving this guy a time of day.
Yeah, it's really weird. That's why I thought he was like some low-level guy. He's like the second in command, and like it's just such a weird dynamic.
It's a weird dynamic, and you literally feel bad for this guy in the beginning. You're like, oh, this guy's getting shit on. You know, this ain't cool. You know, like what kind of life is he leading, you know? And so then we get introduced to a new character, Nanette Cole. And she introduced herself to Robert Daly, and she's sort of like a little bit of a fangirl. Like she says, you write amazing code. I think she even says his code is sublime at some point.
Yeah, she's like she's super fascinated by the way he programmed and like just the way she reads his code. I don't know if he like writes like a bunch of erotic things in his code. Because, I mean, as long as, you know, you put your integers and stuff right now, I mean, you can – call things whatever you want to call them.
Sure, but it could also just be just how he structured things, and you know, for a big multi-level. So I'm assuming for a game of this Infinity, must be pretty insane.
He uses double tap instead of eight spaces.
There you go. There you go.
Silicon Valley reference. Just FYI.
So. So he does all this, and then she's kind of fangirling over what he's done, and goes through his office, and he's showing him, oh, this is Space Fleet, which is obviously modeled after Star Trek. And, you know, he has like all the VHS tapes,
the DVDs, the Blu-ray. He's got every format, the entire 6-season run, which I thought was strange.
Right, right. Of this USS Callister. So we're already told that the USS Callister was basically the old version, 60s version of the Star Trek. And he's a fanboy of it. She seems somewhat unaware, but she kind of remembers it. And then she's, oh, yeah, that's cool, whatever. And then we get introduced to the company's co-founder, James Walton. And this is played by Jimmy Simpsons, who we know from Westworld.
From Westworld. He's also like the incest brother in Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes, and he's also
in the McFoyle twins, yeah.
He's also in House of Cards. So I recognized him immediately from Westworld since I really enjoyed that show, so...
I always think of him as a guy from Always Sunny, but yeah, also Westworld. Westworld was fantastic.
Yeah. So anyway, so he comes in and we get a strange thing because we see this James Walton before on the USS Callister when Robert Daly's playing the captain. Walton kind of plays like a McCoy, but super cowardly. And he's like, oh, we're going to die, you know, and. This character in real life, James Walton, is super brash. He's like, when he sees Nanette, she's like, oh, who are you? You know, he's more of the Kirk kind of character. And he's like, he leans in and he's trying to get to, you know, let me take you around the tour.
Have you seen the tour? Yeah, because she's a nice, attractive looking young lady.
Yeah, so he's like, okay. And, you know, but she's still nice to Robert Daly. But, you know, she obviously goes off with him. And we realize in a few exchanges between James Walton and Robert Daly that James Walton sort of just pushes him and kind of berates him and puts him down a little bit. Not like in an overt way, but he's really aggressive with him.
Yeah.
And Daly's character is kind of like, okay, I'll get it done. Because I guess there's supposed to be some big patch update just before New Year's.
Yeah, they wanted to come on my birthday, December 20th, but...
Hmm. Yeah,
and ends up getting pushed back, unfortunately.
So that's what we see. So, but then later that night, Daly comes back to his house, and he goes into his Space Fleet USS Callister, and he literally strangles Walton in anger of how he kind of put him down in front of this Nanette girl. You know, I mean, he doesn't really overtly say that, but it's like a thing, like they're trying to find this Valdeck, and they haven't found his escape pod yet. And they're like, we haven't found it yet, sir. And he's like, I expect better from all of you. So all of a sudden he's very aggressive.
Rage monster.
Yeah, he's very aggressive on the ship. But when he's in real life, he doesn't show any kind of aggression, or he's sort of like evil Kirk and good Kirk in the Enemy Within episode. So.
A little bit, sort of, except in real life, he's like a total pushover, like even more so than Good Kirk was.
I don't know. Good Kirk was pretty much a pushover. He couldn't even make a decision after a while.
But he was less scary, though.
he was less scary, but the evil Kirk was definitely very scary, especially with Yeoman Rand.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, this is where things got weird. At first, we're thinking like, okay, so maybe he's imagining himself like this, or... Then we find out this USS Callister is sort of like his playground to get his aggressions out in real life, which is interesting.
It's like therapy for him.
Yeah, sort of. And that's what we think at first. So I think we still feel sort of sympathetic towards Daly.
A little bit, yeah.
But the him choking Walton it was shocking to me when I saw it. But I was like, okay, well, he's, you know, it's a computer program. You know, whatever.
Yeah, it's a computer. You know. Right now, you're not thinking much of it. But the next day at work... Yeah. Bad stuff starts happening. One of the other ladies that works there, she's getting coffee with Cole. She's like, yeah, just do wide berth around him. But he's like right around the corner listening to the conversation.
Yeah, he hears her. Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, and she's like, "Oh, you have a crush on him?" And she's like, "No, I just like his coat. It's amazing. And I don't have any kind of like romantic thing. No. And it's like definitely not." So he hears that, and he kind of gets upset. I think,
right? Because he realizes. Yeah, and then he realizes that he's never going to probably have a chance with this girl, at least in his mind. He then. So we have that exchange, but what he ends up doing is he takes some of her...
He takes her coffee cup home.
Yeah, he takes her coffee cup.
After work.
And when she leaves, she takes her coffee cup. He swabs her the cover of her coffee cup to get her DNA. And all of a sudden, then he scans that into the computer. And
so did you know what was happening here? Because I totally called it when I was watching it with Jess.
I didn't call that completely.
I was like, oh, he's putting her into the computer. And she's like, how do you know that? I'm like, the show's messed up. That's exactly what he's doing. He's putting her into the computer.
I didn't know how that would work technically, because I didn't know how you could scan someone's DNA and then automatically put them into a computer program.
But, well, I was just thinking, like, you know, like, since it's, you know, Black Mirror is always a futuristic thing. It's like, there's no reason to, you know, manually 3D model anyone. You just take their DNA and the computer sequences it and figures out what they look like in 3D. So you're just done. But this went, you know, a bit beyond that, because it also captured her memory and essence somehow.
Right. And we get this whole cool sequence where we're seeing that the computer is uploading. It was kind of like the uploading bar is slowly working. It said it was going to take like 16 hours or something ridiculous. And so he, you know, he goes to sleep, he goes to work. And while he's working, you know, he's kind of watching Nanette through his office. And we're kind of seeing that upload bar slowly get closer and closer. And then finally, when it's totally uploaded, we see Nanette wake up on board the USS Callister.
With fantastic hair.
With all the 60s Ackerman. She's got the whole, they got the go-go boots and the
short dress.
Yeah. And she wakes up and she doesn't know where she is.
And amazing hair. I love her hair, how big it got.
Yeah, it got real big. And then she's walking through the hallways, and when she finally wanders her way up to the bridge, she sees everyone she worked for or works with at Callister. But they're
all drinking.
They're all drinking, hanging out. And so we get this exchange where they kind of telling her what really is going on with this game. So apparently Robert Daly, who created this Infinity game, made himself his own little universe that's not attached to any of the other servers or any of the other internet, and it's separate. So,
and it's modded.
Yeah, so nobody can get into it, nobody can get out of it, kind of thing. It's kind of walled off. And what he's done is he's used some technology to scan all of them in, and the computer has replicated them within the program. And although they're, as they explain, yes, Nana, you are still alive out in the real world. You're just a copy of yourself within the USS Callister world. And we have to do Robert Daly's bidding here. We have to play along with this game. And, obviously she's freaked out through this whole thing. She can't get her head wrapped around it.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be shocking. But at the same time, it's like, how do you get full memory from just a little bit of DNA left on a cup? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
And it's definitely a stretch. But I mean, you gotta go with it for this episode to work.
Yeah. Well, and then we get this. Then Robert Daly as Captain Daly shows up, and they start doing this whole, you know, they're going to go on this adventure to get this Valdec character, and she
runs away, and then he beams her back to the bridge.
Yeah, beams her back to the bridge, and at first he goes a little easy on her just because he knows that she doesn't know what's going on, but then he brings her down to this, like, away team mission to catch this Valdec, and this Valdec...
Oh, no, he takes her face away and makes her...
I thought that happened.
No, that was the first interaction.
Yeah,
she's like, what, are you going to throw a fireball at me? And he's like, oh, okay. And then he just snaps his fingers, and her face just goes like just full, just meat sack. So she can't breathe. She can't see. All she can do is hear. She's like struggling for breath.
And this is reminiscent to the Charlie X episode from the original series, where Charlie X just erases that one girl's face.
Yeah.
There's definitely huge callbacks to Star Trek through this whole episode.
And Galaxy Quest a little bit too.
Oh, absolutely, Galaxy Quest. Yeah, for sure.
Because on that away mission you're talking about, like the way it's shot, it feels very much like Galaxy Quest.
Well, and the strange thing with the when they go on the away mission is the character, the Valdek character, he seems like a cross between a Klingon and Khan. You know,
he's definitely.
He's a little ridiculous. Like he's over the top. He's super muscular. He's got the long hair, and he's super. You know, like I'm gonna, you know, kill you and all this stuff. I have the high ground, and you know, it seems almost silly.
A little bit of Obi-Wan Kenobi in there.
I don't know about
Obi-Wan. I've got the high ground.
Yeah, right, right.
Don't try it, Anakin. I've got the high ground. You underestimate my power.
No. So you're like you said, he did erase her face, just kind of like snap her into line. And so when she comes down, they go down the Awain team, and they're trying to chase after this Valdek. We have this interesting exchange where Valdek brings this creature, comes with this like giant bug, and they're like, "Oh my god, we're gonna have to fight this giant bug!" And then just before they're going to start fighting it, he gets Robert Daly gets a phone call.
His doorbell rings.
His doorbell is like, "Hey, you got a pizza?" He's like, "Oh, hold on a second, pause this thing," and he all of a sudden just kind of goes limp and. Everyone kind of like breaks character, and they're talking to Valdek up on the top of the ridge, and he's like, "Hey, how's it going, guys? You know, just doing my thing." And then
this gun is heavy, man.
Yeah, and then the bug is actually some girl that worked in the office that he didn't like, so he just turned into her giant bug.
From accounting,
yeah. So
never liked. Well, it's you know we learn later that basically if you cross him, you just go lower on the totem pole. Like the best part of the totem pole is being in his crew. Apparently, then it just goes down and down and down from there.
Right, exactly. So interesting stuff. And then, you know, obviously Nanette's the whole time is like, kind of like, what the hell is happening here? This is crazy. So she's processing all this. And then Robert Daly comes back when he gets his pizza and he's back in action. He shoots Valdek by saying, "Hey, look, a naked woman." And,
fan dance.
Yeah.
If only they had the Hurik stand in doing a fan dance.
That would be pretty
fun. That would have been awesome.
And then so he takes Valdek out, and he's like, Valdek's kind of pleading with him to make it all over, like kill him.
Go please. Up on the hill, take off all your clothes, and get a fan. Just dance.
Yeah. Do that. And so Valdek's asking him to kill him, but Daly goes, "That's not the space fleet way.
You know, we don't kill in cold blood."
Right, right.
It's like he masks his cruelty in like goodness and justice.
Yes, exactly. So that's over. But then he does this whole thing where, you know, like at the very end, they beam back up to the USS Callister, and they're doing the "He's a Jolly Good Fellow," and he's kissing all the girls, and he goes to kiss Nanette, and she won't kiss him.
She pushes him away.
And one of her friends there, she's like, "Well, you know, go easy on him. Nanette. This is her first time. Why would she know? You know." And unfortunately, he doesn't see it that way.
No, this is the time he does show her mercy.
He does, but then he turns her into it. Doesn't
that's
she,
later.
Doesn't okay. I missed. That.
I think it's later.
Well, anyways,
it's later. Whenever she tried to hack out. Whenever she sent the email to herself.
Oh, that's
right. That's when he spiders the Uhura stand-in.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, so.
So he just is totally benevolent. It's like, okay, he didn't kiss me. I'm feeling good today. I'm better than this. Just be ready to do it tomorrow. See ya.
Right, right. Then, so when Daly leaves, then that's when Nanette Cole decides that she's going to try to hack the system.
But the Uhura stand-in's like, it's not that bad. Get used to it. There's no tongue.
There's no tongue, right. And then that's when they get into there's no genitalia.
Oh, yeah. They do the whole, like, a dogma thing. Takes off his pants, starts slapping it down there.
Yeah, the nothing. Walton character, he literally takes his pants off, and it's usually, he's technically a Ken doll.
Yeah. I love how Cole's like, "No one takes my vagina." I'm just
he says, "He took my vagina. That crosses the red line for me." So it's like, now it's war.
She needs to diddle herself.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. That was a funny line.
And they talked about how they tried to scissor each other, and like nothing, no sensation at all.
Yeah, they were just like, "We just tried to bump," and it's like, there's nothing there. It's dead. So, which is an interesting interesting move on like Robert Daly to write that.
Yeah, because you'd think he'd bring them there for whatever pleasures he wants, but he really, his pleasure, I guess, is just really living out the Star Trek like world.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
But it's weird because Kirk's up with all the ladies, so you'd think he'd want that part in, like especially since he's like going after all the new chicks that come into the office.
Right, right.
That's strange.
Well, that's when Nanette decides she's going to try to hack the system and send a message to herself. And which is interesting. So she sends a message to herself, and then the Nanette on the real world gets the message, and she runs into Daly when he's coming to work and says, "Hey, I got this weird message." And he goes, "Oh, it's for somebody's probably just trying to hack into you." And says, "I would just make sure update your security systems,
update your firewalls and stuff."
That's when he comes back. And then that's when he's pretty upset.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Oh, you tried to contact outside the world," and he's going to basically get rid of Nanette and or whatever.
We're not sure what he was going to do to her, but Uhura stand-in's like, just show her mercy. He's like, okay, and then he turns his wrath on her.
Yeah, he turns her into a monster that was. That basically the same monster we saw on that planet below.
But apparently it's super painful transforming. She was not having a good time.
No, it did not look
good. It was kind of horrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then they, like, lead her off, which was like she's banging
her. They can't get her out the door because she's too big.
That was a little funny, too, but.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. But then we have, after that transpires, and Daly leaves. We have this whole thing where, Cole's like, "We have to get away. Figure a way out of this." And this is where the Walton character tells Cole what happens when he tried to break away and, get out of the game. That he took his son's lollipop from a party or when he brought him into work, and he replicated.
Bring your son to work day. Never bring your son to work.
Never bring your son to work day, especially around, these
creepy programmers.
Creepy programmers is right.
I don't want to make programmers sound like they're bad people because I know we've got programmers who listen to the show.
I know. But pretty funny that he, just don't.
Unless you're the creepy programmer, you can bring your son to work day. That's fine. Just don't let anyone get near his lollipop.
That's right. Shield your lollipop and DNA.
Bring your child in a ball if you must bring them to work.
Yeah, hermetically sealed.
Do not let any of their DNA get outside the ball.
Not even like a flake of skin.
Don't let them go pee.
No, pee in the ball.
They have to wear a diaper that day.
Sorry, son, you're peeing inside the ball. Robert Daly took the Walton's character's son's lollipop, brought the lollipop back to his place, and then he used the same scanning mechanism and scanned his son into the game, and he used his son, Walton's son, to blackmail him to do what he is bidding during the game. Say, "You will act out this USS Callister fantasy with me to the best of your ability."
And he was the first one.
And just to show you what was going to happen if they don't, he blew his son out the airlock. And this Walton gives us very well detailed description of what happens when, you're shot out into space, with no atmosphere or no pressure, unpressurized space, what that does to you. He says that he would do this again and again to his son if he doesn't basically, do his bidding. So Walton basically says, "I'm out. Whatever you're planning on doing, I am not doing it because I just don't want to deal with that." So we kind of get into a whole different side. We keep on getting these gradations of Robert Daly. How at first we feel bad for him, and then we're kind of like, okay, that's a little weird. And now it's okay, we're getting a little creepy territory. Okay, this is kind of just fucked up. And now it's like, oh, you're a monster now. So we've gone the whole range now, the whole rainbow.
But this, at the same time, they are just computer programs.
True. Which we can get into a little bit later.
It's like the whole holodeck thing all over again. It's like, is it cruel killing? Like, is it cruel that Worf has these killing programs so he can just act out some Klingon rage?
Well, I mean, I think we're going into the territory of Moriarty. going back into that. So, which we talked some episodes back. So, but they do formulate a plan because when Nenet sees one of this wormhole open up, and they realize it's the patch to the new game, and that there must be some kind of connection to the outside world in this little insulated bubble that they're in. So there might be a way to get out. So they have to figure out a way to get the ship all the way over there.
She's like, I could blackmail myself in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's not even nice to herself in the real world. Good grief.
Yeah. It's.
She's well, like, I mean, yeah, I've got all these porn pictures of myself.
Well, she's desperate. Yeah. So desperate times, right?
Yeah. It's interesting for sure.
I thought that was a little strange, but I was willing to go along with it. So what happens is they're going to try to get to this wormhole, but what they said they'll never make it there in time. So what they have to do is concoct a reason.
Well, they can't get the ship to go, so they need Robert Daly to come into the game, but they need him to be distracted so they can grab his tricorder.
Right. So that's so they can't get the ship to get to the wormhole. So they concoct a scenario basically with a crash shuttlecraft that they have to go see and rescue. So when Robert Daly does log into the game, all of a sudden they're like, hey, we have a ship that's, has a distress call. It's a shuttlecraft that's crashed on this planet. We have to go check it out. And it's funny at first because Daly kind of looks at them all like, that's kind of weird. And then he's like, okay, yeah, let's go check it out.
But Cole is like, don't let anyone else come. I just want to go down. You need to show me the ropes. And she's like trying to get super into character and kind of seductive on him.
And this is another thing with Daly. Like, why is he just like buying this? Like, he almost, killed her last time. Now it's like all of a sudden she's all right with it. So I don't know. Like, this guy.
Well, it's his God complex. He's like, oh, well, she sees the error of her ways.
She's into me now. Yeah, right. So what they do is they go to down to this planet. They beam him and her down. And while they're going down, she decides that she's going to go not necessarily skinny dipping, but kind of do like, hey, let's have some fun and go play in this giant pool of water. So she takes all her uniform off besides her underwear, jumps in, and she's inviting him to go. And
he's like, come on. He's like, but we got this mission. But she's like, you could say you rescued me.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh, all right. So he jumps in and they're playing around. And it's really strange because you can sort of see that she's really not liking this guy whatsoever. She's just doing barely what she has to do just to, to get him to be distracted.
It's funny that she's trying to go out of the way, but she's not selling it very well. Like you said, she's definitely like gritting your teeth through the entire process.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good acting because you can see it. You can see it pretty strongly, And so I thought that was pretty well how she did that. Next, what happens is everyone back up on the Kalister, when they see that he's out there swimming, they beam up his tricorder, which has a connection that they can, basically connect to the outside world, and they can, and what they do is they go into the real Nanette's photo cloud account and find the pictures that she's saying that we could use to blackmail her.
I love it's like, oh, how are we going to find the pictures? And they go, oh, these are
yeah.
And it's like, I wish I had a boner.
yeah. So,
the last nine will do. Any of these will do.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what they said, too, the last nine. Any of those will do. So they end up sending a text, and they call her right after and say, on the outside world, they say, hey, we have all these pictures, and you have to do our bidding, and so we'll give you instructions on what to do. So, which was interesting, that all of a sudden they get Nanette to move into action, because she's like, oh, shit. So what were you going to say?
Yeah, she goes to Robert Daly's house.
Yes.
Orders a pizza, then breaks into his house.
Oh, and steals all the
DNA
information that he has stored into a fridge that's right by his computer.
And swaps out the headpiece that links him into the virtual world with a dud.
Yeah, like with a dud piece. So during that time, what they're doing is they beam her up while he's going getting the pizza at the same time, and they beam her up and they start heading towards the wormhole. And they get pretty far, but they say we've got to fly around this big asteroid field first. And that's when Robert Daly jumps back in the game, but he's delayed because of the piece that ties him into the Infinity game. Like you said, the real Nanette changed it out with a dud, so he had to get a new one. So it took him a little bit. So they could get pretty far without that. So by the time he got back in the game, he was alone on this planet. Nanette had left. He's basically in his underwear. He's calling up to the ship and nobody's answering. And so what he does is he gets dressed and he runs down and he jumps into the shuttlecraft and he gets that working. And he goes into pursuit against the USS Callister. And from there, they decide that they have to get there because the wormhole is getting smaller and smaller, that they're going to have to go through the asteroid fields, you know, just for excitement purposes. And
pretty much, because before, when you saw the thing open, there was no asteroid field, but, you know,
whatever. Right, whatever reasons. So they fly through the asteroid field, and we get, it's pretty cool effects of them flying through the asteroid field.
The effects in the show are fantastic for just a one-off, and the sets were really impressive too. I mean, they did a really good job for this one episode. This probably had to be one of the more costly episodes they've ever done, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure. And then at the last minute, their engine gets knocked out by one of the asteroids, and Robert Daly's in hot pursuit, and he's going to catch up with them sooner or later, and the wormhole's closing. So what happens is Walton character decides to, he's going to Spock it, and he's going to sacrifice himself to the ship to get the engines working. So he gets in the engine room, he makes a call to Daly, and he's kind of like, telling him basically that fuck you, dude. And he gets the engines working. We see Walton completely burned alive.
Well, the thing was, they said he was supposed to like just burn but not die. But I don't think he ever came back on the bridge once they escaped. Because really, the reason they're trying to go to the wormhole is because they think they'll die. They just don't want to exist in this, you know, infinity hell.
Yeah, they're just like, if we die, we don't have to go through this hell anymore with this James and Captain Daly. They get the engines working, they kick into high speed, and they go into the wormhole. And strangely enough that they live through that. But then strangely enough, at the same time, Robert Daly's character, the wormhole closes, but then somehow the outside Infinity game detects that universe is there. And decides to delete his whole universe that he's created for USS Callister. Robert Daly's still in there, and he can't punch out for some reason. That didn't make a lot of sense.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me either. I'm like, why can't he punch out? Yeah. And why, if he's in the game, it gets deleted, why doesn't he just wake up, but he die? I mean, it's Black Mirror for him to die. I mean, that's...
So he dies, but then the crew of the USS Callister is still is in the outside universe, and they're free and they're alive. And we see that everyone goes back to kind of reset.
Just normal.
Yeah, they're reset. They're not even dressed in their...
And they all got their junk back.
Got their junk back, and they're in their they're in regular like clothing now. They're not in...
They're like some kind of default jumpsuit, because they're all like level one noobs, because they're in the real game now. And yeah, not modded, sectioned off game.
Right.
Which is kind of cool.
And then they run into a character who's another player who's out there flying along. And he's like gamer 691.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you have anything to trade? He says, if you don't have anything to trade, I'll just blow you out of the sky. And they're like, we're the USS Callister. We just, you know, like, I don't care who you are. And then there's like, you know, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to blow you up. And then they jump into warp speed and they fly away. And
Cole becomes the captain. And then the guy's like, oh, good, this is my part of space. Go away. It was kind of funny.
And he has this thing, he says, yeah.
King of space.
King of space. And it just ends. It was, strangely enough, that's that voice is Aaron Paul from...
Breaking Bad?
Breaking Bad, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't get that. That's awesome.
Strangely enough, because I was looking up on this show, apparently Aaron Paul, because he's tied into The Robert Daly's character, Jesse Plemons, the actor.
Yeah, yeah, because he was in Breaking Bad. Yeah.
So he was on the set, and I guess you can see them in one of the like the holiday parties there. And the
I think I did see him. I was like, I think I recognized him. But
and also Kristen Dunst is there too, because apparently she's friends with both of them. I don't know how that works. I don't know if she's dating him or whatever, but she's in that. You could see her in this party too.
And Kirsten Dunst was also in a Star Trek episode as a little child.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, so lots of crazy, crazy connections here.
Yeah, so Dave, we went through the synopsis. The crew lived to the USS Callister, although they will never come out of that program. How did you feel after seeing this episode of Black Mirror?
Like I said, like the entire time I had this like pit of like just like uneasiness. But Black Mirror just does that. Black Mirror is very uneasy. It gives you the sense of unease. I didn't get why he died. I kind of wanted to rewatch it, the ending, but I didn't, to see if I could just glean the explanation. I know they said he was like, you know, his world was getting deleted, but that kind of bothered me. What I want to know is that, okay, since Black Mirror had to be Black Mirror and kill Robert Daly in real life, even though they just deleted his character, like, I wish there was more info on why that happened. Secondly, the real Cole, if she left any fingerprints, DNA, she's going to get fucked in the real world. Because it's like, oh, he dies mysteriously and there's fingerprints of her in there. Like, that's horrible. Like, these digital characters fucked up their real person's life.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that, but it's still, it could be, you know, for sure.
Well, I mean, Robert's dead, and if she left any fingerprints, and I don't think she was wearing gloves.
I don't remember wearing gloves.
She was wearing gloves. So, like, if she left any fingerprints or any hair or anything, I mean, this is the future. They've probably got super good forensic evidence. Like, she could be messed up for the rest of her life because her digital self blackmailed herself.
And how can a guy like Robert Daly not have like a really robust security system, and she can just like sneak in through the screen door, you know?
Oh yeah, the door was just open. I was like, really?
You know, like kind of like daredevil it, you know, just walk in, like hello.
Why was it just open? I thought that was very strange.
Yeah, I understood that she probably snuck into it. It seemed like she crawled up on a roof or something like that, but still seemed not reasonable.
It's definitely a couple of weird little plot holes, and I these digital people, there's the whole question of, you know, are they really sentient or are they just, I don't know how they got their memories just from basic DNA, which I said earlier, but
right
it definitely brings up moral questions about, you know, artificial intelligence. You know, we've had this discussion, we had it with Kipley, we've had it on our own a couple times. It's really interesting stuff, but I think the biggest and worst question is if the real Cole is going to be pressed for murder charges.
You want to see what happens afterward, like, you know, a month later, like what happened to everything?
Because I feel like, you know, that's the, you know, Cole was a bad person. He mistreated AI. You know, I don't know if that's reason enough for him to die. But for her, who was blackmailed by her artificial intelligence self, that just seems. I feel like she was in a bad predicament, personally. Yeah. That's what I felt at the end. I was like, wow, she's going to get screwed.
Yeah. I had also kind of thought that last bit where they run into that gamer in the outside, you know, gaming infinity world, I kind of thought that he was going to blow them up just when they got free. Like, so, like, like, they're like, oh, damn it, they all died, you know? Like,
well, they wanted to die anyway, so that wouldn't have bothered me too much. But
yeah. I know, but I thought it would have been kind of like, oh, man, that's terrible. You know, kind of just, like, tragic. You know, they just got away. They just made it, and all of a sudden, the last minute, they all die. And be like, oh, fuck. So.
Yeah, what are your takeaways? How did you feel at the end?
It's just a couple of things. Like, one thing I really like I said, they were really playing up tropes, you know, like obviously the Captain Kirk type of trope and the Star Trek thing. And then also this programmer guy who you feel bad for in the beginning. And then he turns out to be the villain of the whole thing. And then you start wondering, like, well, did he get that way because people kept treating him like shit and he created this world just to, you know, make his virtual reality a punching bag, you know, to fulfill his fantasies and just get out his aggression? Or was he just like that already? You know, like, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I made me a lot of questions.
like self-therapy, you know?
Yeah, but then the other side of me is like, here we go. Okay, we're going to like make the nerds into the bad guys kind of thing. Like, okay, you know, the creepy guy who nobody wants to talk to is creepy for a good reason, because he's got like all these people, like little, you know, like bugs in a jar, and he tortures them all day long. You know, I mean, it's like that's bullshit, man. I kind of felt like he's like, we're playing this out. We're playing this kind of like, ew, he's a nerd. He's gross, you know. Oh, and here's the reason why he's gross, you know. It kind of frustrated me, to tell you honestly. I didn't think that was where they were going with, but I think it's like a common trope that gets thrown out between non-nerds.
Yeah, you know. I see what you're saying. I do. I didn't think about that when I was watching it, but now that you're saying that, I am kind of like, oh, that's kind of a shame.
Yeah.
That you know, they're making nerds look bad. Because, I mean, honestly, we're all nerds here.
Right, right. And that's so this. I felt that immediately after seeing that. I was like, oh, so that's where you're going with this? Is like, I mean, it's an interesting concept. Don't get me wrong. It was really well executed, besides a few plot holes that we just pointed out. But, I felt like, come on, man, you're gonna put down the nerds. And here's a guy who is, his fantasy is to live out basically the Star Trek original series. You know, and of course, original series has its issues. Don't get me wrong. You know, there's lots of bad acting and there's lots of, you know, plot holes and canon issues and all sorts of things. And we discuss it all the time. But if you're modeling your life after that, especially in this like fantasy world, wouldn't you even be more exemplary than the next person next to you, because that's what you live for? You know, if you're living for a Star Trek ideal.
Well, it's like those people on that group that blocked me because I said something about Discovery. Mm-hmm. it's like the dark side of fandom, where they, you know, worship something, but they don't understand at all what it means and what it stands for.
Yeah, they lose sight of the philosophy just because it's not what they're into.
Yeah, it blows my mind when people are like, oh, I'm a fan of Star Trek, but they don't accept the philosophies, and they hate on people and hate on JJ and hate on Discovery because, oh, it's not Gene's Star Trek. And I'm like, well, Gene hated most of Star Trek that you love, so
yeah, that's definitely a difficult issue. You know, there's two other sides of it that made me think about it. Okay, so one is the fandom issue, obviously. So here's a guy who's into the fandom of the feel of the show, but he's not really into the ethics of the show. Mm-hmm. So because if he was, he would have put the brakes on this a long time ago. So that's an issue. And I was like, well, that's not cool. And then the other side of it is he's, like I said, he'd never put the brakes on all of that.
Yeah, but I mean, the fandom, like, it's, you know, not only like basically by your logic, you know, how they're like saying, oh, nerds are bad because they like things. Now they're trying to make in the same token, it's not just nerds are bad, Star Trek nerds are bad. And I'm like, that's almost like, yeah, they're doing a Star Trek parody, but then they're also like shitting on Star Trek fans a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I felt it. I felt we were definitely, honestly, after watching this episode, and you know, I'm a bigger original series fan than you are. And, I kind of felt shit on a little bit. I was like, oh, thanks, guys. That's great.
So first they're shitting on us because we're nerds. And second, they're shitting on us because we're Star Trek fans. And I'm just kind of like, and the thing is, it didn't come across that way to me until you said something. But like I said, I did have a sinking, not happy feeling. Pretty much the entire episode of watching it. And that's what Black Mirror does. It's supposed to be unsettling. It's supposed to be, like, make you think. And that's usually the mark of a good Black Mirror. And it's a good Black Mirror episode, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, ooh, I don't, now that you pointed that out, I don't like the way it paints us.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
fans of.
And, the other thing I was going to mention before is because I lost it there for a second, was the, you know, we're getting all these, like, obviously we've seen it through the headlines of all these men in places of power who are abusing their employees, you know, if it's, you know, Harvey Weinstein to, you know, whoever you might, whoever's next, you know, like on the deck of big bosses and big celebrities that, you know, either putting sexual advances towards women or raping or whatever, you know. So we're getting all these stories. So here we have a guy who we're taking out the sexual element, but he's still abusing people. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's using his place of power, you know, and I kind of thought that is a little bit into that, getting into that notion, but I sort of get, but it's still, here's the other side is like,
is he really abusing anybody?
Well, that's the thing. That's the real thing that really gets to me. It's like, so if they're sentient, then yes, he is. But if they're just a program and they're not sentient, then what does that say? So, I mean, it's like, you know, like we go on to a video game and we do shoot 'em up games all the time. We're killing tons of NPCs and villains. We don't even think about it. You know, we're not really killing anybody. We're just getting out, having our fun, and we're just enjoying ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. It's different if you knew that those were sentient people.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, are they sentient, or did they just remember everything because of their DNA somehow? Yeah, like is all your memory tied to even your DNA?
Which it isn't, so that wouldn't make any sense. So, no. I mean, but I don't know.
Unless he has, like, personality profiles. Like, you know, they're saying in the future, like, actually, this actually ties into another Black Mirror episode, maybe, where, you know, the one where the lady's husband died? Mm-hmm. And she tried the artificial intelligence where where she started talking to him, and then she ordered the robot version of him, mm-hmm. which had the same, like, you know, algorithm.
Yeah.
So basically take their social media presence and everything they've done online and built a personality around them.
Right, right.
So it could be, but is that real sentience, or is that just really good algorithms that appropriate what the real person would say? You know what I mean?
No, I don't think so. But here's the thing is, interesting thought. And I've read this more than once, that there are people that think that in the future, they'll either have a VR or a program that you kind of like can engage with, or like you said, a robot. And that because of your social media presence and anything else that they could load into a computer, they could build an algorithm of what you sound like, how you talk, your way of thinking, mm-hmm. and it could mimic you. And obviously, the more social media presence you have, the better it can gauge you. So, like,
since the Holics could live on forever after we pass, Aaron.
Oh, you poor people! But the thing is,
do the robots pay for the Lipson and the website? Do they pay for keeping that running?
That's right. Cold hard brick and mortar of what's going on here. But yeah,
do they do that? Because I mean, if they could do that as well as impersonate us, I mean, we could keep going forever. That'd be kind of cool. Santa Claus will never die.
That's cool.
Maybe.
Or maybe we could just buy these programs and they just ramble on forever and ever and ever about Star Trek.
They break.
and we just release episodes, and they're just these robots babbling about weird shit, just modeled after the, you know, hundreds of episodes that we've done.
Yeah, it'd be hilarious. I'd want to listen to a robot version of Star Trek. They'd actually probably be better than us because they'd have like photographic memory of the all 700 something episodes.
Yeah, whereas, they wouldn't have to think about it.
Whereas we have brain farts. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
They'd be better than us. I want to hear this.
I would pay money for that. Yeah. So that's an option. So like, let's say, you know, our children at some point want to reflect upon us. They could maybe do something like that, but I don't think that's a sentient, that's just a program running off of memory. Like looking at a photograph is just a collections of colors with photons hit, and they come and hit your eye receptors, and you see a picture of your, you know, your grandpa, your grandma who passed away or something. So yeah. It's not really them standing in front of you.
And the thing is, the way I like the thing about Black Mirror is, even though all the episodes are standalone, I feel like they exist in the same universe.
It does feel like that. And so, I mean, other than a few standalone episodes that are like, obviously you would know if they did, but for the
most part, I feel like they exist in the same universe. So if that technology where they replicate people is tied into his computer.
Yeah.
And you know, she's just like, oh, I got this job at this place. So that's how she can know, you know, that she works with those people. I mean, they could just be that program that he's got that mimics their personality.
Yeah, but so, yeah, so that's a couple things that came into mind. I mean, obviously, the shitting on Trek fans.
Shitting on nerds in general.
Shitting on nerds in general.
Gamers.
Shitting on gamers, but some gamers have owned up that, you know, obviously.
I mean, sure.
With the gamer gates and shit like that. So,
yeah.
And then also...
Unfortunately, there are people that sully the name. I mean, pretty much any fandom, there's terrible people in, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, no matter what. And then just the fact that, you know, we could be seeing, you know, the power play that we're seeing today with people like in positions of power, just, you know, shitting on people and treating obviously his work friends as, you know, his playthings. And then the sentient life thing. I mean, these are all like really big things that hit me after watching it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's no resolution to any of them.
No, not at all.
But it gives you food for thought, which is always what's interesting about Black Mirror. Is you walk away thinking like, oh, you know, that's interesting that they talked about this, or, you know, it gets you thinking after you've seen the episode.
Yeah, and you know, maybe after we finish the Star Trek Discovery look back, maybe we can do Black Mirror together. On for YouTube and just do some Black Mirror conversations.
That would be fun. I would enjoy doing that.
I would love that because Black Mirror is so great in general, usually.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few,
it's hit and miss.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few episodes that aren't as great, but some are just hit you in the gut.
Oh, yeah.
This one did not hit me in the gut right away, honestly. It felt like, I think, like you said, I felt a slow twist, and I felt that twist... that knife slowly coming and turning towards me and you.
Yeah.
And
maybe subliminally I was feeling what you're describing, that they're shitting on, because it wasn't registering. I just had this like sick feeling the entire time.
I just, you know what it is? It's, you know, I get that they're at the beginning, they're trying to play the trope of like, here's the nerd who's getting treated like shit and you feel bad for him. And they turned it on its head. And that's cool. That's a cool way of writing. It made you sympathetic for the villain at first. And then you now end up hating the villain.
But is he a villain though?
Yeah.
I don't know if he really is. Cause if they're just... The AI that's just the predictive social media algorithm AI, if that's all these people are, then they're not really sentient.
I don't know if I entirely agree. I mean, if they can have independent thought and they can make actions to break out of their programming, then I would say that they might be intelligent.
But they're just acting based on their algorithm that, you know, like the love story one where the husband dies. I mean, it's just an algorithm that just, well, just compiled the social media presence.
But just like you know, we talked with the Measure of a Man. It's like, how can we judge this? And like, aren't we just working on an algorithm, but just, you know, based on chemical reactions within our brain and the meat bags that we live inside?
It's an interesting line, but it's just, I don't know.
Well, but his actions purely is sure. Not. I mean, if he wanted just to make a world where he could just like use people as punching bags, he could have made just like dumb NPC type characters that you see in first person shooter shoot 'em ups, or something to that nature.
But
you know,
mean, you want if you're in an immersive virtual reality world, you want your people to seem as real as possible, especially when you're that immersed.
But you're literally stealing DNA and you're mimicking people. You know, so there's more to it than that. I would say that this guy is obviously he's not looking just to write a villain. He's looking to write in people who are going to be as real as possible. Instead of him writing it, he scans in the DNA and gets as close as a facsimile as he possibly can.
But, you know, I just don't know if that's how they just model people. They just grab their DNA and then they can change it on the fly. I don't know. I mean, it's weird, but I don't know if it's nefarious necessarily, if that's just how they model people in the future without doing vertice by vertice, polygon by polygon.
I don't know. It doesn't, but it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it definitely feels weird. It's like, that's kind of weird.
I mean, if he's not walking up and saying, hey, I want to take that coffee cup because I want to model you inside my game. To Nanette's character.
It's the whole consent thing. It's the whole Quark trying to get a picture of Kira for that guy for a hologram.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's a little creepy.
Definitely creepy.
And, you know, again, we're painting the nerds as the creeps. And yes, there are some fans that are creeps. Yes. But honestly, I've met, I know sports fans that are just as creepy, if not shittier. So, I mean, it's like, you can't just paint nerds that way. It just feels bad because I think here's the issue is that there's a lot of nerds out there. And I know when, growing up for me and a lot of friends that I had that were nerds, Star Trek, Star Wars, Dungeons and Dragons, comic books, these are ways to escape from the real world where we were being treated like shit, either by, bullies in school, family members that didn't understand us or didn't want to understand us, or just a situation that we just could not face up to at the time. If it was either abuse in our households or, coming to terms of who you are as a person, maybe you're gay, lesbian, or
bullies at school.
Yeah. Like I mentioned bullies, but there's a long line of reasons why people go into these escape modes. And usually these people are highly intelligent enough to say, I do not want to be like that bully. I do not want to be like dad who's always drinking and he's screaming at me all the time. There's lots of reasons they're highly intelligent enough. So they hide inside these worlds and they cocoon themselves in it. And it's not because they can't, they don't want anything better. This is their coping mechanisms.
It's a comfort zone.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that's everybody. Obviously some people they watch Star Trek or they watch Star Wars or read comic books because it was fun. That's fine too. But when you get a character like this Robert Daly, who looks, he's introverted, he can't seem to have any command of a situation in the real world, it's because maybe there are reasons why that he became that person because of his upbringing and the environment around him. Obviously, he was a brilliant mind, and we see this over and over again. Many of the nerds that are out there are obviously very brilliant people, but sometimes they're crippled by, shyness and being introverted and all sorts of reasons. So when you shit on the Star Trek fans because they're Star Trek fans and because they're quiet and they have, their pictures of, the Enterprise or whatever, it's like kicking a puppy when it's, I don't know. It feels shitty. That's why it felt shitty to me. I'm not saying that that's what maybe they were going for, but it seems too easy. It's like it's hitting the smallest guy because you're scared to hit the biggest guy. But then again, we are seeing a flip. We're seeing the flip where the nerds are ruling the world these days, and we have them, in places like Google. And all these other big, where these very smart people are running the world. We have the Elon Musks and the Bill Gates and stuff like that. So, I don't know.
And football's on the decline, amazingly enough.
Yeah. So, but not decline enough. So, I don't know.
I heard they're wanting to bring back the XFL so they could have like the conservative football league and the liberal football league.
Oh God, so weird.
That's so dumb. Oh my God.
Yeah. But that's my takeaway. Obviously things are never going to be, as we've talked before, fandom can become toxic. And I'm sure you've known nerds that you've thought were like a fellow nerd, and then all of a sudden you got to know him. You're like, oh, this guy's fucked up. I don't want to have anything to do with this guy. We've bumped into people like that as well. So I don't know. So it's difficult. It's a difficult situation. And seeing this, I felt like it's a low hanging fruit a little bit, but it made for interesting to see a version of Star Trek.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I was wondering how they're going to do Star Trek. So like, it didn't seem like it'd be a Black Mirror ish thing, It was only kind of doing Star Trek because they were doing all this other stuff in the background.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, they kind of had to do it to make it Black Mirror-y, but yeah, I mean, they may not have been intentionally saying Star Trek nerds are terrible people and nerds are terrible people. It may have been an accident. I mean, it very well could have been. It could have just, they were just trying to tell a story. They may not have thought about the ramifications of how it paints certain people.
Right.
And they obviously didn't care about what happened to the real life Cole.
Yeah.
Because that's like my biggest burning question. I'm like,
she's taken away in handcuffs. She's
like, are they going to find any DNA? Are they going to accuse her for his murder? Because yeah, she was literally like, they can probably put him the time and place where he died. And yeah, that, like, his, you know, I mean, it's just, oh my gosh.
I know.
Why did the AI, like, mess up her own real life so bad?
I don't know if they thought that was going to happen, but
I don't know. I'm just kind of like, huh.
Interesting.
You know, if he didn't die, if they would have let him live, or like maybe he was like handicapped or something, mm-hmm, like, you know, from maybe it like messed up his brain and he was still alive, it could have been okay. But it, mm-hmm, looked like he was dead. Like, I think he died. And yeah, so because he died, like that raises all these questions for the real life Cole.
Yeah. And like, wouldn't there be some kind of like, what, the backdoor thing that, like, if you get, like, shut out of the game, that you don't lose consciousness or something? I don't know.
It just, yeah, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, why, yeah, would they just kick you out of the game once the game is deleted? Like,
there's got to be a fail-safe. You know?
Sure. I mean, the thing on your head is just tapping you into the game. It's like just typing into your, you know, synapses so you can see and feel things. But, I mean, once it goes away, you're not in the game anymore. You just wake up if there's nothing to connect you, or you're on your desktop or something, right, you know.
Well,
I don't know.
Cool episode. I did have some issues, and I thought it had a couple little plot holes, but nothing terrible. But yeah. But hey, Dave, next week we have Star Trek Discovery coming back.
That episode might drop a little bit late.
We'll see how it goes. Just scheduling reasons. So
yeah, I got some stuff coming up actually on the 7th. So we're not going to be recording on the 7th like we usually do, like on the night of the recording. So it might drop a little bit later. But going forward for the rest of the Discovery episodes, they should be dropping as soon as possible after the release date of the episode.
Yeah.
After it premieres, you know.
Right. And as we know, if you don't know, Dave Duncan does acrobatic jiu-jitsu flips all the time to get that out as fast as possible. So every once in a while, Dave's got to have a life, so...
Yeah, and even though we didn't have Synthaholics last week, there was still a look back episode on Facebook. I mean, not Facebook, on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And there was two cooking videos. I made cookies and I made a drink. So I was still doing the YouTube stuff. If you guys missed Synthaholics last week, there was still YouTube stuff for you to check out. So go check that out if you haven't already. We'd love a subscribe. We're trying to get to 100 so we can get our domain name for YouTube, like youtube.com/Synthaholics or Synthaholics Podcast. That'd be fantastic. But we need 100 subscribers. So if you could go on and do that, we would greatly appreciate that.
Definitely do that. Dave's been putting a lot of effort into that, and that's pretty cool that he's all the work he's done. And if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. He's growing leaps and bounds since his original Cooking with You. So anything else we want to talk about, Dave, just before we close out the show?
No. Hopefully we'll have a guest on for our first episode back.
Well, we'll see scheduling with that.
Yeah, because my schedule is different than what I originally told him. So we'll see.
All right, cool. Let's close this.
We'll close the book on this one, Robbie. Oh, wait, no.
Oh, yeah.
No, we're going to beam up.
Oh, no.
We're going to go into the Callister, people. No,
let's not do that. That'd be bad.
All right. Well, all our music was provided by Warp 11, except the intro, which is by Dave Wilkes. You can find the show at Synthaholics.com. You can type Synthaholics into YouTube and find us that way. On Twitter, the show is at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004. And definitely, please, if you have a chance, go onto iTunes, rate and review us, give us 5 stars preferably, and write a nice little piece about us if you enjoy listening to the show. Helps us get seen by the iTunes algorithms, which seems to telegraph to all the other podcasting platforms for some reason. Also, if you have a little money that you could throw our way, a buck a month, that's not much to ask for, to help us continue bringing this show, to help our maintenance fees of making the show and putting the show up online. We have a Patreon.com/Cintaholics. We support anything that you give to us. It would be great.
And my friend Dave Kish recently made me aware of TuneIn, which is another podcast service, which I never heard of before. But apparently, if you drive a Tesla, it's the only podcast app that's available on their big screen, that's like on the dashboard or whatever for Teslas. So we are now, Cintaholics is now on TuneIn.
Awesome.
If you want to use that app, and if you have a Tesla, you can listen to us natively on your Tesla now.
Nice. Very cool.
As well as iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and all your other platforms.
And definitely if you know a friend, if you know a family member who's in need of a good podcast, tell them about Cintaholics. Let them know about the good work that we're doing here, down here on the basement floor in a closet with one light bulb hanging over us.
With 5 degrees outside and the wind blowing roughly in Buffalo.
Yes, and our underwear is chafing. So let them know about us.
We need new electric underwears.
But we hope you enjoyed our little... We had two little jaunts here. We did Last Jedi with Nerds of the Round Table, which was a lot of fun. And then we've talked Black Mirror. But once in a while, we like to break out of our roles. We've done Galaxy Quest, and we've done Spaceballs before. So we've definitely broken out of once in a while than just doing Star Trek, just for fun, sci-fi usually based.
Yeah, definitely. We love to have fun and talk all things science fiction, not just Star Trek. And I know most of you guys are here on the podcast for Star Trek, but that's why we're also doing YouTube, to hopefully bring you more stuff that's not just Star Trek, but also Star Trek on the YouTube as well.
Awesome.
Well, thank you all so very much for listening. Live long and prosper. One now.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We laugh and we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. We're 8 minutes away, but Happy New Year. It'll be New Year by the time this comes out.
That's awesome. Very cool, man.